O loving God, in the stillness of these moments, may the words of my mouth and the meditations of all of our hearts, both those present and those here in spirit, be acceptable in your sight, O God, our strength and our Redeemer. Amen. The musical group, Sweet the Sound, directed by Professor Matthew Meyer Bolton, and in which our Minister of Discipleship, Liz Meyer Bolton, sings, has a song in their repertoire, and the words of the first verse are as follows. Laying down my lonely burden, giving up my lonesome fight, for my feet are tired and weary, but his yoke is light. There are burdens we all carry, some light, some heavier than others. There are burdens we even inflict on others. And there are burdens and pains that we inflict unnecessarily at times on ourselves. But most of life's burdens come in the course of normal living, illness, disease, unemployment, the high cost of college tuitions that are ahead for you, all of you up there, mortgages, foreclosures, all sorts of things. And there comes time when our feet and our hearts are tired and weary and heavy burden. But the burdens and responsibilities I want to focus on today relate primarily to our faith and how we live it out in pursuit of God's kingdom, God's realm, how we live out Christ's invitation to serve in the midst of the world. But those of you who are here today with particular heavy burdens that you are facing, you can certainly see the implications for those particular burdens in your life. So in the words of today's text, Jesus said, "Take my yoke upon you and learn of me, for I am meek and lowly in heart, and you will find rest for your souls, for my yoke is easy and my burden is light." And biblical scholars have suggested that the word rest is better translated as refreshment. You will find refreshment. Refreshment for your soul. The image of yoking may seem a bit strange to us moderns, especially to those of us who don't live on farms, and like me, I don't know about all of you, but never grew up on a farm either. The most basic usage describes it as a wooden frame with sometimes a leather banding around the collar, placed over the neck of two draft animals, oxen or horses, and in the middle is a longer bar connected to a cart or a plow behind. And the oxen then would share the weight of pulling the plow or the cart. A heavy load is made lighter in the sharing. As carpenters, Joseph and Jesus would have undoubtedly had experience making yokes. In fact, there is a legend that Jesus and Joseph made the best of yokes in all of Galilee. And farmers came from all over to buy them. And in those days, and sometimes now with specialty shops, there are signs hanging out above the door indicating the kind of product that they were engaged in and making. And this apocryphal story said that sign above the carpenter shop in Nazareth may well have been, "Our yokes fit well." Whatever the truth of that apocryphal story, Jesus is certainly using an image that he learned from the carpenter shop in Nazareth. Most scholars argue that this saying at the end of this 11th chapter of Matthew's Gospel comes in counterpoint to a burdensome set of religious and cultural regulations that were really burdening people, prescriptions of every kind, prescriptions that not only controlled but at times suffocated life, what you could and could not do on the Sabbath, purification laws for menstruation and for birth, ritual laws for growing crops, for cooking and for eating. It was a religious fundamentalism of sorts in which life was prescribed, limited, confined, and then judged. And it was this tension with that conservative strand of his own religious tradition that got Jesus into trouble. He often rejected those burdensome laws by healing on the Sabbath, by talking with the Samaritan woman, by eating with those others considered unclean, by rejecting the fastidious external cleansing and purification when he thought it was the attitude of the heart that really mattered. This was why he was so angry in those earlier verses in that chapter 11 with folks who rejected this new and freeing law of love. He's saying, in effect, my yoke is easier than fundamentalism's yoke of strict law. And my yoke will lighten your burden in life and will bring you into new life. And you'll have that new life more abundantly. But if that is the historical context for this teaching of breaking away from burdensome religiosity, I think we in the faith context of the church can see it in a new and supportive way as you and I go about the work of kingdom building, realm building. Now, I don't know how Matthew's gospel was fully constructed. Many of you have read it through this week as part of our Lenten program. It's a powerful gospel, but none of these gospels are legalistically chronological. Things are inserted here, things are placed here, teachings are placed in juxtaposition to other things, sometimes to drive home a point. After all, these were written 40, 50, 60 years after the death and resurrection of Jesus. And the teachings of Matthew's gospel are incredibly powerful, as you've discovered this week. For example, in chapters 5, 6, and 7 is the Sermon on the Mount. He's talking to us. The poor in spirit will be blessed. Those who mourn will be comforted. Those who hunger and thirst after righteousness will be filled. Those extending mercy to others will receive mercy. Those who are engaged in peacemaking will be called the children of God. And then he went on to say, and sometimes, when you live out that kind of kingdom, you will be persecuted and ridiculed and laughed at. But that's the price you pay for being part of the kingdom. You? Me? Sometimes, my friends, this is a bit overwhelming. To accomplish this kind of thing is almost like a burden. But there's more. He said, you and I are the light of the world, so let that light shine, shine, shine. Don't act with vengeance and animosity toward others. Love your neighbor and hate your enemy. That's what you've heard. But now I say to you, love your enemy and pray for them so that you may be children of God. You? Me? This
is tough teaching to live out in a world gone mad. For example, and this is my example only, you make up your own. In this nation, up until 7 weeks ago, we lived in a country where torture and illegal incarceration and waterboarding done in Guantanamo or Abu Ghraib prison in Baghdad was the operational law of the land. Where illegal wiretapping and disregard for civil rights were the order of the day. Do you know how hard it is to stand against a government that utilizes and blesses such things? Of course you do. But listen, we are to be the lights of the world. And the leaven in the loaf? Is he kidding? Cornel West, one of the leading intellectuals and social critics who's now at Princeton, says it this way: the country is in deep trouble. We've forgotten that a rich life consists fundamentally of serving others, trying to leave the world a little better than you found it. And we need the courage to question the powers that be, the courage to be impatient with evil, but patient with people, the courage to fight for social justice. And in many instances, we will be, and this is his imagery, stepping out on nothing and hoping to land on something. But that's the nature of the struggle. Are you ready for that struggle? Sometimes I'm a bit frightened. Am I really up to it? And it seems overwhelming sometimes to really live it out. Do you ever feel that way? Do you contemplate the work ahead, both in this church and in the wider world, both in the Christian tradition and in our interfaith understandings? Do you contemplate that work sometimes as a burden? And just when that tide of overwhelmingness seems likely to drown us and to sweep us away, and just when we want to throw in the towel and say, look, this is a wonderful ideal, this kingdom, but it's not for me fully. Oh yes, I love my Jesus, but this is more than I can take. Sometimes I'm just weary thinking about it. And just then, at that moment, comes this text. Almost in the middle of the gospel, right there for people like you and like me. For those of you who have been on the walk for hunger, or those of you on the walk for breast cancer awareness, or the AIDS walk. You remember that there were people along the way, some with water bottles, some with encouraging signs that say, you're halfway there, keep it up. Boy, do you look good. And all the other things to keep you going. And then there were others who were there just clapping as you passed by, bedraggled, you see. So here, almost in the middle of Matthew's gospel, after the Sermon on the Mount, and before a whole lot of other teachings yet to come, right here, for people like you and for me, comes a balm, a solace, a comfort, a word, a yoke that rescues us, that gives us a lifeline, that embraces us and gives us strength for the journey. And in the overwhelmingness of what the needs are to live out this kingdom in a topsy-turvy, violent, and highly prejudiced world, comes this sign by the roadside. come to me, all you that are weary and carrying heavy burdens, and I will give you rest. For take my yoke upon you. That's being now together. And learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find refreshment. Refreshment. Refreshment for your soul. We are not alone in the journey. That is the hope that you and I have, and that we affirm this day, that the one whose name we bear, who showed us the face of God, who came healing the sick and eating with the outcasts and talking with the Samaritans and feeding the 5,000 and blessing the children and breaking all boundaries, that very one invites us to be yoked with him in our journey as we live out the implications of this kingdom and realm in our day. Indeed, breathe, my friend. We are not alone. That's the hope we have. But it's not just personal strength for you and for me. In his name, we now are yoke bearers, one with the other, in this world. If we are to be the body of Christ, we are to be the hearts and hands and encouragement to one another as we do this work together, to witness and to live out this new kingdom. That is what the beloved community is for. And we do it in many ways, even as Jesus does it for us. In the town where I live, north of Boston, probably like in your town too, the neighbor kids often have lemonade stands on those really hot, sweltering days of high summer. And I traveled north on Route 93 from Boston, and Sunday mornings coming in and out, it's a breeze. But on the weekday rush hours, traffic is really bad. And last summer I pulled into our neighborhood, which is three streets together and a cul-de-sac at the end, and there they are, with homemade signs, and they're out in the street waving, encouraging you to stop. And I did. You are greeted enthusiastically. Their excitement at having a paying customer is palpable. Change is made, and they begin to pour your lemonade, and they put the cup, you see, on a cardboard box or on an orange crate turned upside down. And then sometimes the force of the poured lemonade knocks the cup over. It falls onto the ground. They pick it up and wipe it on their shirt tails or trousers. And then they put it back, and this time someone holds it, and they begin again. And sometimes there's too much lemon. And sometimes there's too much sugar. And invariably, by the time you arrive, they've run out of ice. It is tepid. It is awful. It is wet. And you drink it. And the kids are thrilled. And do you know? Do you know that at the end of a long day, you are now yoked to those neighborhood kids, and their enthusiasm and joy and your tiredness from the burdens of the day come together, and you find refreshment. Refreshment for your soul. Not only does Jesus' yoke lighten our load, and the burden becomes less heavy and becomes more privilege to serve, but as members of his body and part of the beloved community, we are yoked to one another to give strength to each other for the journey and encouragement in the task of living out God's kingdom and realm in the midst of this world. May that continue to be your experience, and your experience, and your experience, and yours, and mine.